Hello and warm greetings to everyone. Welcome to today's special episode of Radio and Youth Podcast. It's me, Preeti Sarkar, your host for the episode. This is the special episode on inclusion of women, people with disabilities and other minorities on disaster risk reduction. In the series of the project, Youth Leading Disaster Risk Reduction and Climate Action to Multimedia Advocacy, Resilience Now and Into the Future. This series is initiated by Sendai Stakeholders Children and Youth Group and Major Group for Children and Youth, MGCY, powered and hosted by the Youth for Environment Education and Development Foundation, YFED, with generous funding and support by United Nations Office for Disaster Risk Reduction. Inclusive approach to disaster preparedness saves many lives. Inclusion engenders community resilience and promotes equity and human rights. Certain group of people often excluded due to their inherent characteristics such as age, disability, gender, religion, and social status. Consequently, those people become more vulnerable to disasters and climate change risks. Children, people with disabilities, older people and women are disproportionately affected by disasters that lead to the exclusion in all the phases. They have a higher risk of death, injury and secondary impairment, and also all forms of abuse, mainly to the people belonging to the vulnerable group. In disaster preparedness, the participation of women, children, older people, people with disabilities and other minorities is very, very crucial because they are the ones to be hit first and the hardest amongst them all due to the growing disasters and changing climate. Inclusive disaster preparedness provides technical and logical frameworks that assimilate the most vulnerable sectors in the community and enhance their capacities against the rising disaster risk. Mainstreaming inclusive disaster risk reduction will help in building awareness, reducing the disaster risk, and understanding of the community on how to prepare for, prevent, mitigate, respond, and cope in times of emergencies. We will talk about this issue more in our session ahead. For our today's session, we have Ms. Abia Akram and Dr. Wazim Iqbal as our guest speakers here with us today. A warm welcome to the both of you in our first episode of Radio and Youth Podcast. Before I dive into the conversation ahead, let me introduce our speakers to you all. With a personal experience of physical disability, Ms. Abia Akram has been known as one of the most active women with disability leaders globally. In the struggle of giving voice to women with disabilities, she has been lobbying with parliamentarians, UN high-level representatives, focusing on developing advocacy strategies to raise awareness, network and build capacity, and at the UN level in relation to the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and Inclusive Development. She also coordinates efforts of including persons with disabilities in the implementation of the 2030 Agenda and its Sustainable Development Goals. In particular, she established the National Forum of Women with Disabilities Special Talent Exchange Program, Aging and Disability Task Force, and has been recently assigned the responsibility as chair to Asia Pacific Women with Disabilities Network. She is the coordinator Asia Pacific Women with Disabilities United and coordinator South Asia Disability and Development Initiative Project, executive board member Commonwealth Disability Forum. She is also the recipient of Human Rights Presidential Award and is among the chairing 35 change makers globally. She was also given the British Council Alumni Award for her services for the persons with disabilities and bringing social change in the life. While our next speaker, Dr. Wazim Iqbal, is the first tribal person from the Andaman and Nicobar Islands to receive the PhD. He is currently employed by the Central Agriculture Research Institute in Port Blair as a researcher. He is also the recipient of the Lieutenant Governor Commendation Certificate for his outstanding work in disaster management back in 2017, and the Rajiv Gandhi National Fellowship for his PhD in 2010. He has been actively engaged in the sectors of sustainable development and environmental safety. I just can go on and on about their achievements and the works they have done. So without any further ado, let's begin our session today. So diving into the questions that I have for both of our speakers today, my very first question to the both of you is, why do you think that women, people with disabilities, LGBTIQ, indigenous communities, and the others belonging to the minorities and marginalized sectors are more severely impacted and bearing the consequences than the others due to the changing climate and disasters? Over to you.
Thank you so much, Preeti. The question is very complex, but it needs to be addressed actually. Why do you think the women and people with we need to be focused on them actually? We need to address this. As I belong to the minority and I belong to the tribal community, Indigenous Committee of the Nicobar Islands, I will talk about the experience of myself when I was facing the 2004 tsunami. I have been rescued 3 disabled people who was in like washed out because of the tsunami wave during that day. So in our community, tribal community in Nicobar, actually women we call is a backbone of any society or backbone of any family or any nation. They need to be aware of them. So I'm so lucky that I have been born in a community where women is always first more than a man. So they are taking care of every single part and almost 50% share of women constituting the society. So women can create lots of awareness program in this family level itself. Because if the family is aware of every single thing, every single disaster or any kind of preparedness that they are given to them, it will be reflected on the child or on the family. How can we get medicate the vulnerability of any kind of disaster when it hits to you. So, I will tell you one story that how have been having seen during the day of the disaster. The day of the tsunami has been hit us. So, in Nicobar we have a watch. Actually, we have a 15 villages in Nicobar, primitive houses. Every village will have their own, we call it watch house in the coastal area, which will tell you every problem in the coastal area or any kind of a cyclone is coming. We have watch people over there. And they will come to the inside of the village and will tell us that this cyclone is going to come, and they will declare in every village that new people has to evacuate from the unsafe area. This system has been taken from the initial indigenous, a long period, like the oldest age. But I never understand it before until I saw the issue when I get adult and I saw people was telling us that the sea is coming inside of the sea is coming. You just run to the high hill. So we was just run to the high hill during the high hill area. And because of their awareness and because of their alertness also, they have come into minute, I think. They told us it has to evacuate this low-lying area and go to the island. So that one was a unique thing because every village person has to be in the watch house for every month. A rotation, what we call a period to watch the cyclone or watch anything, because basically we was keeping the watch house for seeing the cyclone, because we've always been affected by the cyclone. So that was the idea of the whole people. Keep people over here. Something is happening. We has to evacuate from the coastal area to the highland area. And this was more like how old people has thinking and include every woman in that program to like evacuate people and that move from the low-lying area to the highland area. And this was a technique that the old people has been using for a longer period. That's why they keep us more safer than any others, what we call male in India, because everyone has been aware about what's going to be happening and what has to be done. And regarding the LGBTQ, we have less LGBTQ over in Karnakova Islands. Maybe it's more, but we never been identified them because it's still in hidden. As the physically handicapped, I have own brother, which he was a physically handicapped, and we have been struggling with evacuation during the tsunami because he is unable to walk, unable to talk, unable to do anything. So that was my turning point to see like there should be a special team or a special training to the particular people who are having a disabled person in their family. We can give training them how to handle and how to evacuate them during that time. Because generally, when any disaster happens, generally people think that we should save ourselves. They won't think about another third or something happens. But they are also alive people. We need to rescue them before or like before anything happens. So this need to be addressed. So far, I'm working with classroom management also. So far, our SOP is not concerned about the physically handicapped so far here in the Karnakova Island. But it need to be addressed then because this is a big issue. Because maximum of like half of the population are disabled here, old age and women. So this will be, we create some kind of program in this for evac, for training for them. It will be really good. I will pass on the question to the my fellow.
Over to you, Avia. What do you think about why the people with disabilities, LGBTIQ, indigenous community, women especially, and the others belonging to minorities are being severely impacted due to the changing climate and disasters? Over to you.
Thank you so much. As Dr. Vazima have rightly mentioned, like we can see 10 to 15% of the total population are persons with disability, 50% of them are women and girls with disability, and more than 80% they are living in the rural areas or from the global south. So that's a huge, huge number which is not visible, and they are not the counted population. And if we talk about the LGBTIQ, if we talk about other marginalized groups, young people with disabilities, or the diversified groups, the complicated situation gets even worse. And from the disaster-prone areas, they are not getting the equal opportunities, and they are really like deprived of the basic needs of health, education, employment, or access to the services. And it's all because of the gaps that exist in the two main sectors. One is the legislative perspective, like the legislations are not that much inclusive formally with the disaster response, and we are not that much engaged with the National Disaster Management Authorities with all the frameworks which we can compile from the Sendai framework to the National Disaster Management Authorities, and how we can link it with the Sustainable Development Goals. So that a very visible gap that exists. On the other hand, the civil society organization representative, they are not that much active, so they can, you know about their rights and how to protect themselves. It's really complicated situation at the moment. We have witnessed the women with disabilities, they were dying in their homes and they are not getting access to the services. We also recognize that during the COVID situation, it was more difficult for women and girls with disabilities to survive because of the gender-based violence and the sexual harassment they were facing. And we also like see like it's really important how we are addressing these challenges and coming bringing those persons with disabilities out of their homes, but in the disaster situation, how we are protecting them to reach out to the safe space where they can have the protection systems, the government policies and the systems are in place where they can provide them the assistance to evacuate and all. So yeah, this is for the response of the first question, but yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Abhya. It's absolutely right. Like, people with disabilities, women, LGBTIQ, and other minorities have been identified by different sectors as the most vulnerable ones, but there is still a gap in the actions they are coming up with. The actions that are being developed, the strategies they are coming up with, are still not very applicable to them. So we hope that in the nearby future, considering their values and their needs, the strategies and the actions will also be developed accordingly. Since we are talking about the people with disabilities, women and other minorities growth, what do you think are the immediate problems or the differential impacts that you have observed or experienced by yourself brought by the changing climate and the disasters, the increasing disasters? What are the severe impacts that you have seen in your surroundings or the ones that you have experienced by yourself? Over to you.
Yeah, what I have been facing, the first impact of like a gathering food. We are as in the island, we are far away from the land. And when we really need to collect the food, like a normal person unable to collect the food, then how does a person need to collect? That should, I saw many times during this time and disaster. Like food is not an instant thing that you can get here, and every food has to come from the land for the travels of our island. Because we don't cultivate anything, because we only farm. What we have food over there, they are limited. During any kind of disaster, we are unable to fetch any food from anywhere. So I saw many times like a family, which are not having that a huge family. So they are unable to carry the food because they have to take care of their disabled child, a disabled father, or other family member. This is a difficult thing for them to reach to the hospital or medical facilities or food. This is amazing. And during the survey of all the houses also, people sometimes they are not reached to the exact person who need to be addressed or needed more like a help during the disaster. Like there's some kind of system has to be developed for those who are like for women and for a disabled person or who are belong to them. Or I think so LGBTQ in somehow they can survive. But the women and the disabled are somehow difficult because a woman cannot get that what they need during the period or something. They have a measures of period that they need something that they are not able to give them, and they can get a disease or something else and increase more disease in the colony or in the family also. This thing just need to be addressed. Like what I see during that time, that the people who are having a disability in their house are unable to move out to their houses. So we has to we provide the entire camp, other neighboring family and start providing them, because community level need to be for a community, we need to help other in the community, other families. So this awareness or this kind of effort need to be done in others' families too, so to give and help to others who are disabled. And if you are normal, just please help them. And this impact, if you're helping them in this way, it can be reduced the problem of those families who is having what we call a handicap or disabled or old age of women or women. We can help them during that kind of period.
Thank you so much. It's absolutely right. There has been several heart-wrenching scenarios around us where the people with disabilities, women, elderly people, and the others have been severely impacted due to the change in climate and increasing disasters. There are times where they are rescued and helped out, but there are a lot of many other times when they are left out behind, being struggling to struggle with the disasters and overcome them and survive. So over to you, Abhiya. What are the major differential impacts or immediate problems that you have observed or experienced brought about by the changing climate and disasters?
Yeah, thank you so much. I think we have witnessed during the earthquake before, like Pakistan had a big, huge earthquake in 2005. And at that time, almost 400 women who became disabled and they got spinal cord injuries. And there were a lot more in the flood response. We also got some examples from the Nepal earthquake. We had the disaster in all these areas in South Asia region, and we got like a lot of experiences from women with disabilities themselves and their families, and how they reported that. Like, even the people who were having women with disabilities earlier, they unfortunately mostly they passed away because they were not able to rescue them. And few of them who were survived during the situation, they just left them and they said, we will carry our expensive things like gold, jewelry or the kettles. And they left their person with disabilities because that's really difficult and have to carry them along. So that was the reason they were leaving them behind. And secondly, the people who came to rescue them, they were the ones who were doing all this sexual harassment and violation of their rights, and they were really in a critical situation. We got few stories of women and girls with disabilities who were like, she was having intellectual disability and she got pregnant for 2 times because her parents left her there and nobody was there to protect her, to give her the safe space, and they just find the only solution was forced sterilization. So that complicated situation have like been reported during the crisis situation, and it impacted more on women with disabilities and persons with disabilities because they have the mobility problem, they have the like access to the services, they have the problems of going to the washrooms, the accessible requirements and food, and all these were the challenges for them. Even the wash facilities are not inclusive during the response on the disasters. So these were the few stories I'm just reporting here, but we have many more examples where persons with disabilities are really facing these challenges during the response disaster and also the climate change. So we really need to address all these issues, and we have also the good examples as well, like in many of the areas where they already like worked in collaboration with the disaster response, the DRR and the emergency response both work together. So there we have very good examples where they have coordination mechanism, where they have the systems to address. They took persons with disabilities on the priority because they are the most vulnerable, and then you can automatically include other marginalized groups or the other people as well. So these were a few of the examples.
Absolutely, there are still many lots of uncovered stories and unheard stories. We hope that the stories that have been heard, that have been shared, would be addressed by the concerned authorities so that sufficient actions are taken in order to combat these rising challenges, and the sufferings they are having will be reduced in the nearby future. Since we are talking about the impacts being faced by the minorities and we are talking about the changes they have been experiencing, what do you think is to be done in order to combat these challenges, to develop a resilience to fight these increasing threats and risks, and also can you please tell, like, if the efforts that are being made in the present day time are sufficient and catering enough or not, or these sufficient making visible impacts and differences in the communities or not? Over to you.
In our village, like in mainland India, we have panchayat, but in a tribal area, in Ganikuman tribal area, we have captain. So we have chief captain. So every village will have all of our total we have 15 villages. So in 15 villages there will be a captain, first, second, and third. And this captain will be like this captain has been given a work allocation to, you know, take care of the entire village. So for like during disaster, past disaster, how people has been mitigating everything and are responding to the disaster. So the first captain is a responsible a captain who will give order to the subordinate people over there who work under him, and they will be go for the village wise survey. How many people are in the house, how many people, how many women, how many men, how many are the old people. They are doing the classification itself in the village itself, village community. And as per that, they start giving the ration. Ration for making the during any kind of disaster. They will start distributing ration as per the family member, as per the family need. Because in the initial period, they will start making doing survey of how many people are in one family. As per much the the government is giving the ration to the people. So they will give exact amount of ration to the people over there in the family, which is helping to combat the issues, like reducing the issues of the family. Because because the captain know what are the problems in the family, and they will provide every kind of assistance to the family who are needed more. In this thing, the tribal community is very good because they start identifying the weaker family, and the other family will start helping them provide more food. Even though the more relief is coming from the government, they will get preference for help for the weaker family, even though for the help. And here, the first priority in the tribal community is saving their women, and especially about the disabled person also. We have a different set of respect for those LGBT and women and this purpose. So we'll get focused to the family who are having the issues of having a person which is disabled, and they will do more focus on them because they need more help. So any government scheme is provided to the village, we will prefer first to give to the family which is affected more than other families and which are having more disability. So this will decrease the problem of that family. This method is really good actually, but it need to be practiced in the mainland India or all over the world. Yeah, but it depends upon how people are thinking, just helping each other. Because in our community, we are meant to be helping each other, and we're meant to be together actually. So over to you, Abby.
Yeah, thank you so much. Like, there are certain practices being prevalent in certain communities or certain territories which are to be replicated in the other parts of the world as well. There are some of the best practices, as you mentioned, which will help the other communities to grow as well. Such practices are to be amplified to the other communities as well. So over to you, Abhiya, about what do you think is being done to combat and develop the resilience towards the increasing threat and risk, and are they sufficient or not? Over to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. For the good practices, obviously, or the initiatives that have been taken, I think that was not possible without the joint effort of all the key stakeholders. We cannot do individually multiple activities. So for the disaster response area, we did some work with the UNDIR. We also did with the DIR forum, like how we can share those examples on the regional level and then coming to the sub-regional and on the country level. So when I just share one example, like during the flood response in Pakistan, we have established the support mechanism with the National Disaster Management Authority in the MIRA, in all the like surveys we incorporated the questions related to persons with disabilities, how to include that information in their plans, the on one hand, and on the second hand, in at the very community level, we identified the buddy system and trained the teachers, the students of the universities and the local community members, as Dr. Wazim also mentioned, like there were some local communities, so we conducted focus group discussions with them to identify the persons with disabilities where they are located, because every year they have the floods in the same place and they don't want to evacuate those places. So we just put the flags on those areas where the persons with disabilities are living, and we created a support system within the local community. So they provide them the assistance through providing information, to providing them like evacuating them and taking them to the safe place. And then we ask with the government or the key stakeholders to like just to coordinate with them and put them in a place where they can evacuate. So in that way, we just a little avoided that kind of disaster, or like we rescued those persons with disabilities, and after that we supported them to register with the government and all, and provided them all the support to get a ration card, the local community initiatives and the government, what kind of support they are providing. So we link that with them so they don't feel apart from the mainstream linkages, mainstream organization. So that kind of support we have provided.
Yeah, thank you so much, Avia, for sharing about what you have been doing in order to combat this threat and risk. So moving ahead, since we have been talking about the inclusion of women, people with disabilities, elderly people, LGBTIQ, indigenous communities, and the others, who do you think is the most responsible and accountable one to ensure and enhance the inclusivity and meaningful participation of all of us over to you?
Yes, more responsibility and more accountability. This started with yourself. More accountability, because as community, whenever disaster it hit the community, you are the first responder. We are the first responder when any disaster happens. So the responsibility is need to be taken by the state government who are working in a disaster or something in disaster risk reduction. They need to be conduct more training in panchayat level or a tribal council level or national level. And this our training need to be done at least two or thrice in a, let's say, a couple of months or maybe half 3 months. Because I have been working more than 3 years in disaster or capacity building. So whenever I go to panchayat or wherever I go to central council, I'm so happy. Like whenever I ask what you has to do when an earthquake came, you know, through the duck and hole and dog, what you're gonna do when the tsunami is coming, you hide your hair. So the trainings need to be done by the responsible officer who has been assigned to this job. So every community, like any community level, has to go and train women especially, because women spend their maximum life in houses, take care of everyone, take care of everything. And if the women know about the knowledge of this disaster and what, how to respond, she can teach the child, she can teach her husband, brother, everyone, because one woman can teach everyone in a single house. So this from the classroom level, we need to be like a proper training or awareness program regarding all those disaster. in happen in future. Because if they are knowing about this, if the earthquake is coming, then what to do? If the cyclone is coming, then what to do? They has to know what are the precautions for that. So during my experience, when I go and ask, now they are just going and ask them, and they are like, I'm so well confident. The women over here are really in response, available, responsible for everything. Like they can respond, they can handle if there is any kind of disaster. Like if I see in COVID-19, I have a stupid blowing working at COVID-19. So every ASHA worker here in Andaman Nicobar and in this door workforce for surveillance, that was head house to them. Every day they're going to the house and checking every people who are, or every person who are suffering from the COVID. And they are taking care of every single person, providing ration, providing medicine. And this is really like how women are more reliable than other. I cannot say, I cannot discriminate that how the men are in the field also, but they're more like, when women come here to work, they, it's a different impact than men come here for this reason. So in this one, we need more training for any kind of disaster to be done, and other women can be usually added every role that can be, because it can help us more, because we have more population of women as well, so they can deploy in any kind of work because they are well powerful and well equivalent to the men.
Yeah, thank you so much. Over to you, Abia. Who is the most responsible one or the accountable one you think to ensure and enhance the inclusive and meaningful participation of all? Over to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. As I completely agree again with Dr. Wazim, like it's not possible to work in isolation. It's really important, like all the key stakeholders work together, but definitely we need to define and add the words, not only the vulnerable group, but individually or the marginalized group. We have to identify the groups in separately, like because everyone have their own needs about own challenges, own advocacy. And if you talk about the LGBTIQ, they have their own specific requirements. So we have to mention what are the categories and they need support, and then include their voices at all levels. Same is the case for persons with disability, men, women, children, LGBTIQ and all. Like persons with disabilities, they have to have their own recognition, own identity, and then they can talk about their own rights. So we cannot exclude the state responsibility and accountability of the service providers and the national level mechanisms, because that's the most important one. And then we can create inclusive, safe and resilient society for all.
Thank you so much, Abia. Absolutely right. Like every individual, either they belong to the minority or the other group, everyone should be accountable and responsible to ensure and enhance the inclusivity and meaningful participation of everyone in each and every sector. Every individual working at different levels, working at different sectors, and engaging themselves as different stakeholders are equally responsible and accountable to enhance the inclusivity and increase the participation of everyone at all the levels. So moving ahead, since we have been talking about the inclusion and meaningful participation of the people belonging to the minorities, Can you also tell us about what is to be done in order to enhance the participation of those and them in order to ensure their safety and resilience of all? Over to you.
As Ms. Abi just tell us about, we need to group like in disability, there are different kind of disabled person. Maybe there are 50%, 20%, or may are 100% disabled. But we can utilize the resources of the 20% disability as per the disabilities. As much as like if I am a blind person, but I cannot do anything, but I can talk and I can sense. And if I am like a disabled from leg, but I my hand are working, so that disabled person can be utilized to distribute, you know, like a distribute relief or something. Every person can be classified, and they can be utilized during the utilized during any kind of relief distribution. Talking about the LGBTQ, as they are. What we can say about LGBTQ, they are different, a good creature, what I'm thinking. Because they have a two part of heart, they can be men or they can be women. So we can put all this LGBTQ in my idea, two part console. Like we can do for us a psychology of whenever people go for trauma, we can put them for counseling for them. Like a counseling technique has to be teached to those people, because they can mold themselves in any kind of character, because they have a different kind of character. So as a male body but a female heart, so they understand what our situation is going on and how to respond to that. They know also, because I saw many of LGBTQ over here, like when I conducted a walk through, so they have been. Actively, they are always take the search and rescue, and they are taking care of the first aid. They always go for the medical safety and all those things. They educate themselves to work in the medical field. So we need to classify every single person as per their quality, as per their disability, and as per how they are comfortable with that work. If we identify them, what they can do, we can generalize their talent, and we can give them the same work which he is prior to work in that one. It will be really helpful for us in future, because they a defined job, a defined character, defined perspective need to be identified among this group. So it will help us to make our society, our community resilient from disaster.
Thank you so much. Over to you, Abia. What do you think is to be done in order to enhance the participation of marginalized in order to ensure the safety, inclusion, and resilience of all? Over to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Sorry. I just say, like, enhance participation, it's not only about participation, but it's like meaningful participation of all the people, like how we are giving them the safe space to contribute, accessible space to contribute and talk about their informed like experiences or the decisions. Because when we just open as a beneficiaries, they are added in our conversation, that's not enough, and we cannot tolerate for another decade like persons with disabilities are just counted, or other marginalized groups counted as minority groups. We really need to create that environment for them which are accessible and including them as a meaningful participation and how they are contributing at all levels.
Yes, absolutely right. Like, participation is not only the thing, but meaningful participation at each and every level and different sectors is also equally important. We hope that the content authorities are looking forward to the engagement of the minority groups at different sectors in a meaningful way as well in the near future. So moving the conversation forward, my next question is, what are the policy and the program challenges on the inclusion of marginalized and minority groups in mainstreaming discussion, particularly for the empowerment to the efforts and impacts of climate change and disaster risk reduction? Over to you.
Regarding this, it need to be like what we call this in the disaster risk reduction.
Mm-hmm.
We never been addressed minority and the women that much. They need to be pushed toward disaster risk reduction. They should have. We need to teach them. We need to alert them. We need to give more training because the challenges here we never been whenever we conduct a meeting of disaster risk reduction. You may be seeing only men's over there or whatever, NDR or something like this, but then you never seen like a woman or a disabled person because they've never been encouraged to work in disaster risk reduction. They have been isolated. Every time they have been isolated, we need to bring out them from the isolation to help in disaster risk reduction. If we could in future, if we take all these women or disabled person, LGBT group, or we give them recognitions, or give them provide them a good training, and they can help us in this one. Every time they are facing an issue when any disaster hit, because there has been a gap between a man and a woman here. So we need to fill that gap. It should be improved 50-50% for everyone, include the disabled person, the person. Like we can divide it to 25% for the male, 25% for women, 25% for LGBTQ, and 25% for the disabled person. Almost 100% has to be included in the if we are making disaster risk reduction. Disaster risk reduction will be more stronger, more sharp, and more inclusive. Entire community. We should not left anyone. And we has to, or who are responsible to take care of this, there has to be like a watch. We need to watch them if the government is implemented the scheme properly in state level or in the district level or in the state. It need to be it need to be followed by that. So this will be make our given more resilient society or any nation, because disaster happen every single second, but it has not been that much proper address for the disabled people and for the women and for them. So we need to include all these three classes into the mainstream for the future.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wazim. Over to you, Alvia. What do you think are the policy and program challenges on the inclusion of marginalized and minority groups in the mainstream of discussion? Over to you.
Thank you. Yes, for the policy change, obviously it required more the policy with the bites, because if you just make the policies and the programs according to the persons with disabilities requirements, but then you don't have the accountability mechanisms, financial allocations for the implementation, and also for the like UN support, international body support, what kind of mechanisms you are establishing on the regional and the country level. So that really counts for that. So for the policies implementation and making the policies is important to have a system where everyone can contribute, but at the same time they have the accountability mechanism in place.
Yes, thank you so much. There is a long way to go in order to bring all the marginalized and minority groups in the mainstream of discussion in order to empower them. Everyone working in different levels and different sectors should realize the needs and values of the people belonging to minorities as well. Their voices are to be amplified and to be addressed as well. So we are almost now at the end of the session. So I would like to request the both of you to share anything that you would like to tell us before we end today. Over to you.
Thank you so much. So this conversation is really good, and I really want to share that this kind of program needs to be done every month or something like that. At least, so we can give more awareness to the people, to our listeners, or to our community. So, in future, if we do this kind of program in a classroom level, or in school, or college, or any kind of institution, that we can create more awareness programs regarding the transgender protection, or specifically on women or disability. I would like to conclude in this that we should be aware, be connected, then we can make disaster resilient community for the future. Thank you so much, and over to Ali.
Thank you. Over to you, Abhi.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I think this conversation was really, really informative, and for the people who are listening to this, definitely they have more experiences to share, and we are very open for the discussion further. And I feel like we just need to discuss what are the further recommendations that we can compile in a recommendation format or the checklist or something to develop for the local partners, for the international organization, UN, or especially the civil society organization, so they can also put their recommendations further, and we can make a more inclusive and safe place for all the diversified groups. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Avia and Bizzy. We are sure that we will have more discussions regarding the inclusion of women, people with disabilities, and other minorities in not only in the sectors of disaster risk reduction and climate change, but other sectors as well. We hope discussions like this will turn out and come up with much more good recommendations to bring changes and engagement of the peoples belonging to minorities. Now, with this, we have come to the end of our today's episode on inclusion of women, people with disabilities, and other minorities on disaster risk reduction. It was great hearing from the both of you. Once again, thank you from all of our sides for sharing your valuable time and wonderful words and stories with all of us. We hope this session has turned out to be informative and interesting to all our listeners as well. We will be back with our next episode in the series very shortly. Until then, stay safe and start acting green. Bye-bye. Keep listening to Radio and Youth Podcast.